I was talking to Jeanette about the, well, talking, you know, texting. That's how we, texting kind of means the same, right? Talking about the sermon and about the, she asked, is this a standalone sermon? I said, no, it's part of a 3-week series, but I don't know the name of it. I don't have a name for the series, but it's all about Easter and, you know, the cross and resurrection, but I don't know. There's no name for the series, but there is a name for the sermon. It's called My Messy Family. And we've already been getting into that, some of that. But just glad you're with us today. We're going to do this for a couple more weeks headed towards Easter Sunday coming up. There's several things about Easter Sunday. And for me, this has started early in life, this question in my mind that was trying to connect the death of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus to a bunny rabbit. And I was having a hard time with that connection. So, and this is my mom. My mom decorates, she gets some stuff out. And it doesn't matter what season it is, you know, she's got some stuff. And over the years, stuff has accumulated. And there's been some seasons where I thought bunny rabbits, these were alive and actually multiplying, you know, while it was going on. And so this is just a table at Mom's house. But just so I could sort of do some research about Easter and the bunny. So Wikipedia, you know, they know, right? The Easter bunny is a folkloric figure and symbol of Easter. You know, I thought it was something else, you know. It's depicted as a rabbit bringing Easter eggs. Okay. Originating among German Lutherans. Well, there you go. There's where the problem starts, I guess. Originally playing the role of judge, evaluating whether children were good or disobedient in behavior at the start of the season of Eastertide. So that's what it's all about. Have you been good or not good? I suppose. Then it says, the Easter bunny is sometimes depicted with clothes, I guess. And in the legend, the creature carries colored eggs in his basket, candy, and sometimes also toys to the homes of children as such shows similarities to Santa Claus. They both bring, anyway, this was a little too much for me. Because I was thinking that Easter was about something else. And evidently, Mom was too, you know, because not only, you see this set up here, but if you notice closely, there's also that, you know. But it was kind of overwhelmed by still that, right? So the series that we're going to talk about is not about bunnies. It's not about eggs. We're going to have some Easter egg hunting. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. So today, we're going to read from our Bibles a little bit. So, you know, phones, read from your phone or whatever you got. And we're going to read fast over some. I'm going to highlight a few things. But today, we're going to talk about the connection between not just that Jesus died, but that he was human and he actually could die. Okay, that was even a possibility for the creator of the earth. So 1 John starts out like this. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made. And nothing, without him, nothing was made that has been made. Okay, this is Jesus. He's come into the world. Or he's coming, not yet, but he's created everything, right? You got that part? He created, nothing was made without him. And then later down in like verse 12, it says, if you receive him and you believe in his name, you can be children of God. But the main verse I want to hit on here is this verse 14. And for some, they'd say this is maybe the most important verse in the Bible. I can see why it's definitely top 10, right? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Get that. The Creator of all things became flesh. So the word flesh, what does it mean? It became flesh. Well, in Greek, the word is sarx. So let's say that together. Sarx. Sarx. Yeah. With a Texas accent. And sarx, in Latin, it's carno. Say carno. Like carnivore or like carnal. As a matter of fact, sometimes it's translated in some versions as carnal. Paul especially uses the word sarx in his letters. And when he uses the word sarx, he's talking about probably the nasty part of being a human being. The part that's not good. You are human, kind of like, ooh, you're, ooh, one of those. God, think of this, God became carnal. Doesn't even sound right, does it? But the flesh, it's the part of humans that are hungry. It's the part of humans that get angry. And you know, when you get hungry and angry, you get
angry.
Boom, my church. and we get sad. And human beings get tired. And Jesus got tired, and he got sad, and he was hungry, and he was angry, and we get discouraged. And we have pain. You know, when he dropped the hammer on his toe, it hurt, right? It hurt. And he got dirty, and he probably got sweaty, and there were probably body odors that, like maybe you have. I mean, maybe Jesus had bad breath. Jesus was a human. And so this idea that he's human is really important for us today. We're going to talk about this and how it really impacts our relationship with God. He came from heaven to earth to show the way. So I want to say he was human in every way. Sometimes people will say they'll do something wrong. Usually bad, some kind of bad behavior, and their excuse for it is, or what they say next is, well, I'm only human. And Jesus would say, yeah, but you don't have to do that. Being human is not like you're lower than. Being human is like awesome. And God became one of us. He created us first, and then he became one of us, just like Jesus. So he came, and he became flesh like we are flesh to show us how to live. Like the song, he came from heaven to earth to show the way. He's going to show us how to do this. He was like us. And so his life, he is a role model for us. Show us how to live. In Hebrews, it says he was also tempted in every way, just like us. So I don't know when he dropped the hammer on his toe, did he cuss? I don't know cuss words in whatever he spoke, whether it was Hebrew or Aramaic, but I don't know. But he was tempted. Like, so that means he had all the temptations I've had. He's been tempted to steal. He was tempted sexually. He was tempted to be prideful. And of anybody who ever lived, couldn't it be him who was, right? Look what I've done. So he was tempted in every way, and yet none of these human characteristics controlled his behavior. None of them controlled his attitude. He was human, but it wasn't an excuse for him. He didn't let those things control him. So he came to show us how to live, but also he became flesh like we are flesh to show us how to die. Death, more than some of these other things like hunger or fatigue or body odors, death is our enemy. And yet death is so just normal. It's like part of every human's going to do that, right? We're going to die. We know we're going to die. And yet death has this grip on us, and there's this thing, the fear of death. So he came not only to show us how to live, but also to show us how to die. He died, and in our Easter story, instead of eggs, we get this other thing, life. He died, but then he was raised again. He defeated death. Resurrection means it's showing us how to die. Death is, resurrection is part of it. That resurrection means we're going to overcome death and the fear of death. And all of what I'm going to call death's associates. Here are some of death's associates. Meaninglessness. Like, why am I here? I don't matter. Nothing. What do I do? Everything I do will be forgotten. And it will be. But, you know, we have this fear or this feeling of meaninglessness. Jesus says, no, I'm put to death. I'm overcome that. Because instead of meaninglessness, I'm going to offer you a life of purpose. And then loneliness. I love how our first slide this morning, it was new to me. Is that the first time we used that slide? Probably not. You belong. You belong here. Instead of loneliness, what Jesus shows us how to do is belonging. That we belong. We belong. There's a place where you belong. It's with your family here. It's not only that. There's this, another of death's associates is scarcity. I'm going to run out. What am I going to do? I'm not going to have enough money. I'm not going to have enough food. I'm not going to have enough clothes. I'm not going to have enough time. I don't have enough. And Jesus says, no, you have all you need. I'm going to provide you with all you need. And then there's this, the biggest one is that I'm going to be unloved. And Jesus says, because I don't know if I deserve love. I haven't earned love, so I'm not lovable. And I don't know if you've ever felt unlovable before. I've felt unlovable. And Jesus comes to say, you may be unlovable under your standards, but you're loved. So all these things that are associated with death, he's not only come to overcome death, physical death itself, but all of death's associates. He came to teach us how to live, and he came to teach us how to die. But mainly, maybe most of all, he became flesh, like we are flesh, to reveal to us and to remind us of our true identity. I want to put it like this. The Gospels are our family's identity story. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they tell the story of Jesus, but they're also telling my family story. This is me. This is who I am. I'm part of this family. Let me go into that a little bit more, but just know this, that Jesus becomes flesh to show us how to live, to show us how to die, but then also to show us who we are, that we're children, that we're daughters, and that we're sons of God. Our identity manifesto is the life and teachings of Jesus. Our identity statement as an individual and as a group is the life and teachings of Jesus. The Gospels, this is who we are. This is the story. The Gospels are the story of who we are. It's our family story. It's who we are. It's the Gospels are the story of what we do. This is what human beings do. What Jesus did. Do what Jesus did. This is how to do it. So he's showing us who we are, what we do, and how we do it. That's what the Gospels are. So we come to this, he became flesh, and this is this next statement, it's hard to wrap my mind around, but that the God who is infinite in power and perfect in love became a person. And that just blows my mind. He's infinite in power, and he's perfect in love, and he became human. Like me. I was born on January 22nd, 1953. I, boom, exploded into the world, fully human. I was covered with hair, ironic. My dad nicknamed me the missing link between, you know, apes and humans. That was me. And here I was. And I've been human ever since. Like Jesus, he became flesh. He became like me. Now, here's the next thing. All of us, we are members of his family. So John starts this story like this, this idea of him being human, and he did that so that we would know our identity. Matthew starts it a little differently. You know, the New Testament, God had this great plan that we're going to have the New Testament so we could learn about him, learn about Jesus, right? And he starts it off like every good book starts off just with a bang. So it just sucks you in. It's so exciting. You can't imagine. You're going to read every word of this because it starts out like this. How exciting a beginning is this? This is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac was the father of Jacob, and Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers, and Judah was the father. Wow. Woo! That's exciting. I want to see that when it becomes a movie. Well, the genealogy served a purpose in those days, a little different than it does for us today. And so I want you to get on board or thinking about what was the genealogy for? What was it used for? In the day when they were popular, they're not so popular these days, but in the writings of those days, it was very important. It was very similar to what I would say, this is your resume. You're sort of putting yourself out there. This is who you are. This is your LinkedIn page, you know. This is your social media image or presence. Do y'all know what I'm talking about? Okay? And you know, what you put on LinkedIn or on your resume, you don't really put everything on it. Especially if you're hunting for a job or you're trying to gain some kind of positive recognition, right? There's some things you might leave off, like why you left your former job. There's some things you might want to, there's some things you did that you want to talk about. You know, you were an Eagle Scout. But there's some things you don't want to talk about. Like, you know, you stole candy from the store or whatever it might be. You know, there's some things you don't. Jesus, and the same with genealogies in the day. They weren't necessarily always historical. You can see other genealogies and they'll skip people. They'll leave some people out. They'll call them by different names because some of the people that are in their background are not the kind of people you would want to be associated with, that you certainly wouldn't want them to be in your family line. Jesus was just the opposite. And so in his genealogy, something that would never have happened in that day, of course, those are over 2,000 years ago, but would never happen, there's four women. There's four women in the genealogy. And so right off the bat, the most obvious clue that the family of Jesus was extremely inclusive is it had four women. And not only did it have four women, but also the four women were all Gentiles. And so if you're a Jew and you have Gentiles in your LinkedIn page, these are your connection to what? No, scorn. They're like, oh my gosh, that'd be the first thing you would say if you read the names of these women. Oh my, we don't want to be a part of that. And not only were they four Gentile women, they all had backgrounds. How can I say? So Tamar first. Tamar was the wife of two of Judah's sons because both of them died before she could have a baby. So her plan was dress up like a prostitute, seduce her father-in-law so she could have a baby. That's who you want to be on your resume, right? Or the next one would be Ruth, who we know is really awesome, but she's a Moabite, which Moabites were always the enemy of Israel. They were famous, especially in numbers, for seducing the Israelite men. Again, a sexual kind of connotation. They were always the enemies. And then there's Rahab, the Gentile from Jericho, who was a prostitute by profession. And then there's Bathsheba, probably the most famous, but in what we call her in this, they don't even call her name. They just call her Uriah's wife, Uriah the Hittite's wife. She doesn't even get a name because she's, again, despicable. But the thing about the list is the men in the list were the ones whose actions were most despicable. And there are many of them were kings. But if you go back and just look at their life, many of them are, I'm just going to use Manasseh. And he might be the worst, but there's a contest for the worst. Here was Manasseh. This is the line of Jesus. Woo! Wouldn't you be excited to have this guy as one of your former relatives? Here's what he did. This is in 2 Chronicles 33. He rebuilt the high places that his father Hezekiah had destroyed. He erected altars to Baal. He made Asherah poles. He bowed down to the starry host and worshiped them. He built altars in the temple of God. He sacrificed his own children in the fire of Ben-Hinnom. He practiced divination and witchcraft. He sought omens. And he took the image that he had made and put it in God's temple. But most of all, he led Judah and all the people of Jerusalem to do the same. So not only is he sacrificing his children in the fire, he's also encouraging the rest to do the same. That's my great uncle. That's my great great grandfather. This is Jesus. This is the list. So what about the list? Why? The family line of Abraham to Jesus was definitely morally bankrupt. And yet, he chose this family. This is the family he chose. He chose them, I believe, for a reason, that the Holy Spirit guided Matthew to include these names so that we could know that our identity as children of God is based on his love, not our performance. We're part of his family, not because of what we've done, but because he loves us. We're part of his family is not because we're worthy to be in his family, but because he chose us because of his love for us. God chose this family to remind us that his love meets all the requirements to be a son or daughter in his family. I'm thinking, and this just hits me because I looked over at Jeremy, and I'm thinking about Elaney going to college. She's going to college. She's got a great deal at college. She had other great deals at college. You know why? She earned them. She earned them. That's not the way it is in Jesus' family. We don't ever earn that. There's outlaws and in-laws in the family. We don't earn it. We get there because he chose us, because he wanted you in the family. Not because you're good enough, not because you passed the exam, but because he loves you. We have a messy family. But our family here, boom, we're pretty messy ourselves. In our family, there's adulterers, there's addicts, there's liars, there's prideful people in our family, greedy, spiteful, judgmental. Right now I'm just talking about the straighters. Not talking about your group. We're broken. We're afraid. We're lonely. We're wounded. When my family would gather at my mom and dad's house when I was an adult and had children, it's me, my three sisters, their families, sometimes even my grandchildren. And we'd gather up before the meal, and at certain occasions, we'd stand in a circle, and Dad would, I'm going to use this, he'd pontificate, you know what I'm saying? Tell stories. And he would talk about the family, and then we'd pray, we'd hold hands and pray. And Dad would always pray say this as part of his prelude to the prayer about our family, that we're family, we love each other. And he would always say, and I always thought he was talking to my sisters and brother-in-laws. I have three sisters. They all married sketchy guys. Olin, you know, so. And he would say, kind of pridefully, and we've never had a divorce in our family. And I knew I was not going to be the one. But he was saying it kind of like a prideful thing, but also a warning. You know what I mean? Maybe a father-in-law could do. Oh, it's kind of a warning. But it was me. I was the divorced one. And so sometimes a person, they feel trapped in their failures. They feel like their failures are now defining them. And their weaknesses and their temptations, and maybe they're excluded or disqualified, or at least they're put kind of on the edge, like the women who would not have been included in any other genealogy of the day. But Jesus says, yes, you're in my family. As I'm thinking about this, in this last statement, his death was the ultimate demonstration that he became flesh so we could be part of his family. So I'm thinking of this song lyric, the song Reckless Love. The overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. It chases me down, fights till I'm found, and leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it, I don't deserve it, and still you give yourself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. When I was your foe, your love still fought for me. You've been so, so good to me. When I felt no worth, you paid it all for me. You have been so, so kind to me. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. There's no shadow you won't light up. There's no mountain you won't climb up coming after me. There's no wall you won't kick down and no lie you won't tear down coming after me. There's nothing God wouldn't do to rescue you. And the rescue we need is freedom from losing our way. Freedom from losing our identity. So when you begin to wonder, who am I? Or you begin to wonder, who cares for me? After all I've done, I don't deserve his love. And that's true. But he came for you, and he came for me. He became flesh for me. You and he became flesh for me. He died for you and he died for me. He was raised for you and he was raised for me because we are his kids. And there's nothing he won't do for us. First John. See what great love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. We're going to stand and sing.